All right, I believe we're recording now. We are. Good. Good for me. It is by the handy little iPhone here. It is 3:46 in the a.m. It's actually Saturday now, June 8th. And this is Stream of Consciousness number 3 that I'll be talking about for the next however long I feel like it. And maybe this microphone's going to make less noise this time. Maybe not. We'll see. But I've got it on a little stand this time, so we're going to find out. And okay, so a couple of things have come up in the last day or so that I kind of want to talk about. And the first thing that I want to talk about is a little piece of my I don't want to call it my childhood, but I guess it's my adolescence. And it was a simple comic strip called Calvin and Hobbes. Now, I believe it was Bill Waterspoon or Waterworth, or I think it was Waterspoon. But so this cat, he had what was probably one of the best comic strips ever, ever, ever. And it was about a little boy, and this is for the three of you who don't know what Calvin and Hobbes was. It was and if it's not like your experience with Calvin and Hobbes is beyond seeing Calvin peeing on the Chevy logo because the guy's driving a Ford truck. So yeah. So anyway, way to you know, besmirch the amazing innocence that was Calvin. Anyway. So Calvin and Hobbes was a comic strip about a little boy. He was about 6 or 7 years old, and his stuffed animal, Hobbes. It was a stuffed tiger. Now, to Calvin, Hobbes was real. So in the comic strip, anytime you saw Calvin playing with Hobbes by himself, then Hobbes was a full-grown tiger. Anytime Calvin was around other people, the Hobbes character was a stuffed animal, and was exactly what a stuffed animal does. He just sits there. He does nothing. What was amazing about the comic strip was it was the imagination of Calvin that was part of the fun. It was the trouble that that Calvin would get into on a daily basis, and then it was scathing social commentary, but in a way that was childlike and innocent, but pointing out the very obvious. And what was interesting was Calvin had a mother and a father, and they were really nice folks, and no brothers and sisters, but the mother and the father character had no names. They had never called each other names. They were mom and dad. And whenever the two were in a strip together, they always called each other hun or darling or something like that. So their names were never revealed. And there was a, I don't know if it was a love interest or just a friend interest. It was, her name was Susie. And she was kind of like the antithesis of what Calvin was. She was the girly character who would get in touch with, you know, Calvin and, I mean, excuse me, Hobbes's feminine side. So sometimes Susie would take Hobbes and take him on a tea party. And Hobbes actually loved the tea parties with Susie. She was kind of, he was kind of in love with Susie just because of the way Susie treated him. It was very different than what he experienced with Calvin. Anyway, Calvin always took that as an insult, but anyway. And then there was Mo. Mo was the bully, and he would always beat Calvin up for lunch money or brownie or whatever. And there weren't too many other characters in it. There were reoccurring fantasies where Calvin would be Spaceman Spiff. He would be a intergalactic traveler and in a spaceship, and he would go to strange planets and stuff like that. And that would be most of the time it would be because Calvin was in class, and I believe he was in second grade, if I can remember correctly. And it was Miss Wormsworth, and she was just an older woman teacher. I think She reminded me very much of my second grade teacher named Mrs. Lamb. And it's funny, I remember Mrs. Lamb. I don't remember too many other teachers. Maybe third grade was Mrs. Ziegler. I would really, really have to think hard. I know my sixth grade teacher was a mister, and I can't remember his last name, but yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't remember very many teachers at all. Not by name anyway. I remember my physics teacher from, I don't know if it was 11th grade. I really don't even remember. I just remember every single day he wore brown corduroy pants, and he was really laid back. I would be willing to bet that the man smoked a lot of pot, because he was very, very laid back, and nothing seemed to bother him. He wasn't one of those teachers that got really upset or anything, and he made class cool. And I think as a result, when a teacher makes a class cool, kids want to be in that class. They don't want to go to a class when they're going to get, you know, yelled at, or if they're going to be made to feel not smart enough if they didn't read what they were supposed to read. You know, for this particular guy, corduroy's guy, it was almost okay if you didn't know the answer because you forgot to read the chapter that was supposed to be happening. Now, obviously, he wasn't going to give you a C plus if you failed. If you failed, just fuck you. It's on you. You failed. So, teachers. So I remember Mrs. Lamb. I don't remember my first grade teacher, although I should have. Maybe that was Mrs. Ziegler. I don't really know. It's embarrassing that I don't remember as many teachers as I should, because teachers are supposed to be next to your parents. They're supposed to be the most influential people in your lives, in your younger life. You spend a lot of time with these teachers, especially in the grade school that I went to. In the grade school, we still had one class, and a single teacher would teach the entire year. So I probably, if it comes down to it, I probably spent more time on a daily basis with my teacher than I did with my mother. Probably by force, because you're not allowed to just go off and go out and play whenever you feel like it. We had recess, but, you know, when you're in class, you're in class, and you have to be in class. So there's a very few things I remember when I was in grade school. I mean, one of the things was that we would have weekly spelling tests, and I remember one moment where I was taking my spelling test, and we all had to find a private place in the classroom, because we weren't allowed to look at each other's papers and stuff like that. Now, I don't know why we couldn't just sit in our desks. I don't know if the teacher was trying to make it fun or whatever, but I'm believing this was fourth grade, maybe. Anyway, I just remember being under a desk along the wall somewhere. It was very strange. I don't know why I chose that, but that's what I did. And, you know, there's another couple of things that I remember. I remember somebody was playing a ColecoVision, no, not even ColecoVision, like a little Coleco football game, and it's those handheld things with little dashes that you move around, and there was a dot that represented the football. It was, oh my God, was it rudimentary, but it was fun, and I would play the hell out of those little games, and I remember it had had a 9-volt battery it ran off of, and it was LEDs, or is what, no, not LEDs, LCDs. Yeah, I think it was, no, it was definitely LED, like the old LED, like numbers, but these were like little lines, and you would tap it around like that, and when you get to the one end of the screen, you just show up on the left-hand side of the screen, because you kept on running straight, and, I don't know. But anyway, I remember one of the kids had brought in a larger game. I think it was a 2-player game or something like that. And everybody was huddled around the desk because it was, this was like 19. I'm going to really screw myself here. I think it was 1983, maybe 1982, that this was in sixth grade or something like that. And everybody, I was watching and I was like not paying attention at all. And all of a sudden somebody shut off the game. And I was like, oh, what did you do that for, you asshole? And, you know, like, you know, you're 10 years old or 11 years old in sixth grade. And I remember his name now, Mr. Hauser. So Mr. Hauser was actually standing right behind me when I said, you asshole. And that was in a time and in a place where you just didn't, you did not curse, period. If you did, you were in trouble, and you would have to go to the principal's office. Now, what was really cool about Mr. Hauser was that he was smart enough to realize that I had known just how terrible a crime I had committed just then. And, you know, I walked very slowly to my desk because the kids were all like, and, you know, like, everybody knew I was in trouble. And so I walked kind of slowly back to my desk, and I just sat there, and my head was low, and I felt like I had just killed a kitten in front of a Mother Teresa, and it was just terrible. So anyway, so I've gotten off track again already, really early too. It's, we're only 11 minutes into this, and I'm already like completely off track. So, let's go back to Calvin and Hobbes. And, Calvin and Hobbes was a comic strip. I'm not even sure who it was for, because it was like one of those deals where, depending on the day, any person could find it amusing. Any person could find it maybe a little bit heartfelt. And then there were other strips where you would read it and you're just like, oh, okay, that was cute. But if you really read it, and maybe you were a little more versed in social norms, or maybe you were maybe more open to interpretation, it really made a lot of points on deeper levels. And I would be interested to have a big book of the comic strips. It's not a complete collection, but it's a collection. I think it'd be interesting to go back and look and see if I can interpret any other stuff, because this was a strip that was in, you know, I'm not gonna Google this or wiki this or anything like that, but I believe it started in the I'm gonna call it the early 80s, and it probably went through the early 90s. So it really didn't, it wasn't around that long. God, you have comic strips like Nancy and Beetle Bailey, and, you know, these strips that have just been around for fucking ever, you know, and how many times can the ghost, not me, do some nuisance, and Jeffy and Billy and Dolly and PJ are all saying, not me. I mean, that's so cute. The Family Circus. Circle. Family Circle? Family Circus. Family. I don't remember what it is. I know one's a magazine and one's the comic strip. Actually, it's not a, well, sometimes it was comic strips. Family Circle, whatever that comic strip was, is probably one of the dumbest comic strips I've ever read, because there's absolutely nothing to it. It doesn't make you think. It's very family oriented. Every single newspaper on the planet can run it, except for maybe Muslims, because, or Palestinians, because it's very Jesus based. It's very Christian, and every once in a while they do have some Christian themes and some Christian imagery in it. So I don't know if that necessarily needs to be in our comic strips, but, you know, whatever, it's cool. If somebody feels strongly about that and they want to write it into their comic, then great. And if it's, if newspapers carry it, then that's great too. And then you say, well, newspapers, what's that? Maybe you're listening to this in 10 years when, newspapers have all folded in 2016, you know, but, that's just, that's a short sighted prediction. I'm thinking by 2020, there's just going to be no more newspapers. Maybe the New York Times. Maybe the LA Weekly or LA whatever it's going to be. Probably not, though, because New York and LA are much more progressive cities, and although they have a lot more to write, and they probably have a lot more as far as subscriptions, subscribers, and certainly more people buy it on the street. However, I mean, just things are changing so quickly in the media delivery business that, you know, you hear all the time that magazines are just running out of money. They're going online only. They are, they're not printing anymore. And I just heard that FHM is no longer, which that's fine. I mean, it didn't have to. I mean, look, when I was in college, Maxim was the bomb. Maxim was the best magazine for guys because it was about 80 to 85% of what Playboy was, but you could have a Maxim sitting out and nobody would make all that judgment on you because it's not naked ladies in there. I mean, it's mostly naked. It's a lot of implied. It's a lot of greased up girls in bikinis and lingerie and stuff like that. And then they would talk about a lot of guy stuff, you know. It's like, and that's what was cool about the magazine, is that because we're guys and we're sitting around a fraternity house and, ooh, the new Maxim's in. Cool. Let's see it. Who's in there? Oh, Jennifer Love Hewitt. Oh my God, she's so fucking hot. You know, and I used to watch her in Party of Five, and damn, she was smoking hot. And then, you know, you would see her in her little half shirt with the bottoms of her boobs sticking out of the bottom, and you're just like, that's the best thing going. You know, they would get all of these celebrities and models and sometimes just, you know, hometown girls. And which we're gonna get to in just a second here, but I digress. So you would actually be wanting to see this. And so what Maxim was the male equivalent to Mademoiselle or Glamour or God, there's a couple of magazines, Vogue, not really Vogue, but probably Glamour, probably oh damn it, I just had it in my head too and I just forgot it. So it was a 250, sometimes 200-250 page just tome of guidedom. And oh damn it, I can't remember the name of the most popular girls magazine right now, and it's gonna pop into my head later, and it's a long word. It's like it's like Mademoiselle, but it's not, I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, and it's gonna bug me too, because my brain does that. It'll get stuck on something, and if I don't get it out, oh man, I'm gonna have to talk about something completely unrelated. Anyway, so it was the equivalent to the big girls magazine that they would just take on road trips and read and stuff like that. So, but what's funny is I picked up a Maxim magazine 2 years ago, actually maybe a little more than 2 years ago. And the reason why is because my girlfriend at the time, Tiffany Crystal, she and I submitted her for Maxim's Hometown Hotties. And I, you know, we took a bunch of pictures, not necessarily specifically for it, but then submitted her and she got accepted and everything was great. And, you know, and she did the Maxim, I mean, she did the Facebook push and the Twitter push for vote for me, blah, blah, blah. It's my favorite thing ever is to vote for people on social medias. Ugh. But anyway, and she ended up making it through to the top 50, and in the top 50, I believe you had to make a short video, and then you actually got your picture in the magazine as the top 50, or maybe it was top 100. I think it was top 100. That must be what it was. Anyway, so it was really cool because I had to buy the magazine to see a picture that I had taken of Tiffany in Maxim. So I've been published by Maxim, kind of. No photo credit, but it doesn't matter. Okay, so Maxim's Hometown Hotties contest. That has become retarded. It just seems like it's gotten so big that almost anybody can enter, and anybody does. And so this is now the season. It's June. Started last month, so in May. I guess this is for 2014 Hometown Hottie, or maybe 2013. I don't know. I don't even know. I don't even care, because all of a sudden my feed just got jammed up with about six people who are saying vote for me in Maxim's Hometown Hotties, and I say no. I'm not going to do that because, first of all, vote for me contests are scam. They are really only there to drive traffic to the site of wherever you have to vote. And I'm not going to do that. I'm just not, because Cosmopolitan, that is the name of the magazine that all those girls read. So it's Cosmo. Yes, so Cosmo and Maxim were almost the same size. Cosmo is still big, but Maxim, when I bought this Maxim magazine, it was like 45 pages maybe. And thin pages, they used to be thicker or a little glossier, a little maybe slightly heavier stock paper. And now it feels like a Time magazine, or a Newsweek, I guess would be better, a Newsweek. It's a small, thin, not so much going on magazine anymore. So sadly, most of their stuff has been going to online, and I see that's where most magazines are going to be going, because listen, it's just easier. It just really is easier. I don't need magazines, and here's why. Because you read a magazine, and then when you're done reading through it, and then what do you do with it? Most sane people throw them away after a little while. I've never been good at that. I never know when to throw them away. So I still have a few Maxim magazines and Playboys sitting around in my house, just sitting there, and I don't. I mean, I guess when I think about it every once in a while, I'll throw them away. But I remember when I was a subscriber, I would have stacks of them, and they would just sit there, and that's not good. I mean, I know a lot of people do this too. They don't know when to throw their magazines out, so they'll have bookshelves full of their magazines, and they just take up space and they take up weight, and then your thing fucking falls apart because you've put 300 pounds of magazines on it, and it's designed to hold 60 pounds. So the problem is, or the solution is, the iPad or similar. You know, like the Galaxy Zoom, Galaxy Tab, the Galaxy Tab. Stuff like that, so that you can get your magazine on your digital device, and then you read it as you see fit, and then you can always keep it, and it takes up the exact same space as if you didn't keep it, which is kind of cool because it's not a bad idea to hold on to those forever just because they're entertaining to look at, especially if you look at them 10 years ago, because some of the ads in there, just the way advertising has changed, and certainly the product lines of things have changed, and it's really neat to see things. I believe I have a computer magazine from about 15 years ago, and that's even crazier because you're looking at digital media for cameras, and you'll find a like a 16 meg card for $80. Megabytes, not gigabytes. This is a 16 megabyte card for $80. And you're just looking at it like going, somebody used to pay that. You know, somebody used to buy that, spend that much money on a card that held what basically one photo of my D800 would fit on. It's crazy. All right, so back to Calvin and Hobbes. And how some of the funniest Calvin and Hobbes were the ones where he almost, how there was almost nothing written, like there was almost no actual dialogue. Maybe it was Calvin and Hobbes and they're dancing, and they're just dancing up a storm up on the bed, and there's music, and the notes are floating through there, and then the last panel will have the actual joke that makes sense. And you know, so I mean, Bill Waterton, I guess is his name. He's a fucking genius, and he's also very brilliant, I think. Calvin and Hobbes, from what I remember hearing about this, and I'll probably have to Google this and wiki it after I'm done with this. he basically had a story to tell, and when he didn't feel like telling the story anymore of this little boy and his make-believe friend, he stopped. He didn't go on for 41 years with the same boy and the same jokes and the same stuff. It may have only been 7 or 8 years that he did the strip, and it just ended. And I gotta say, the last, there were many times, there were many strips where he didn't care about being funny, because at this point, we had fallen in love with this little boy and his tiger, and we shared experiences with the boy. We shared his discoveries. We shared his social growth. We shared his emotional changes. And there were many strips where I welled up with tears because something was to happen. It might have been, they roughhoused a lot. There were many strips where they would play a game when Calvin would come home from school. A lot of times Hobbs would be lying in wait for him, and he would tackle him, and they would fight, and then, you know, you'd have the little spinny thing with the arms and the legs sticking out and stuff like that. They would do their little wrestling and fighting. And usually it would end up with Hobbs sitting on top of Calvin, and Calvin ever wanting to win, he would say something like, have you had enough yet? And even though, you know, Hobbs is sitting on top of him, maybe filing one of his claws, you know, Calvin still believes that he's winning, and he wants to call it a draw or something now, because just to let him off easy. So, I mean, silly things like that. But there was one that I remember where Calvin accidentally made one of Hobbs's eyes pop off, and he freaked out. And he freaked out because that's what a 7-year-old does, or a 6-year-old does, when his favorite stuffed animal has a rip or something happens. So what was really cool about the strip was that he would tackle complex social issues and complex emotional situations. But at the heart of it, it was still a 6-year-old boy who acted like a 6-year-old boy when traumatic things to a 6-year-old happened. And I remember there was, and I'm gonna have to go get the book right after this, because and try to find some things, but I just remember seriously welling up with tears, and maybe even one fell at one or more of the strips. And I don't know if it was the very last one that made me sad, because I don't believe that the last one was sad. I think the last one was like really hopeful, and it was Bill Watterson was saying goodbye, and he was saying goodbye through Calvin and Hobbes to his audience who had loved this strip more than anything. And his, I believe his, what is it called when you're distributed? I think is, what is it? Syndication. His syndication was as big as it had ever been when he decided to quit. So he kind of pulled the Seinfeld where he went out completely on top, and you never heard of Calvin and Hobbes again. He never brought out supplemental material. He never brought out extra, you know, bonus strips every once in a while. Just nothing, no more, which was disappointing, because it left a lot of America just kind of like, for lack of a better word, wanting. We wanted to know more and laugh more and cry more and feel more from Bill, but he just basically said, I'm done, and he stopped, which, you know, great. It was one of those things that it really kind of was one of the things that defined my adolescence. And you know, I looked forward to reading Calvin and Hobbes every morning in the newspaper, which I don't think a lot of people can say that they look forward to reading a comic strip every day. I think that's sort of fallen out of favor. And I know you can get them delivered directly. I know Dilbert was one of them where you could get Dilbert directly delivered to you, I think, either in an email or maybe you sign up as like almost like a podcast or something like that, or you know, it would just appear at your computer every day, which that made sense. That was the first, because it was a very techie kind of strip. And Dilbert's funny. I don't know if Dilbert is still going on, but you know, how many times can you say the same jokes about the evil project manager, I would call it the stupid project manager saying that he wants something yesterday and physically meaning it, meaning he wants you to go back in a time machine and deliver it to him yesterday so that he could have it for the shareholders meeting. And then the evil HR director, I believe that's Catbert was HR, and I don't remember what Dogbert was. Maybe Dogbert was HR. I don't really know, but you know, having worked in that field, I kind of understand. It makes sense, but unfortunately, the markets, the target audience is a little narrow for that, because even 10 years ago, Cubicle Farms were still around, and you know, you had your cube jockeys and stuff like that, and then six layers of management on top of them and stuff like that. But I think a lot of that got slimmed down in the recession, and you had a lot of middle management getting laid off. Heck, I got laid off as part of that whole restructuring of America type situation. And you know, my job obviously got dissolved into other people's jobs. So, and that's cool, because it's not like I had to work really hard. It's not like somebody had to now jump in there and do two full jobs. Now it's just basically enough job for one person to do all the time. So, yeah, so I guess that Dilbert is less poignant now, but I haven't read it in a long time because I don't really care. And they didn't have when I was a carpenter, they don't really have a carpentry comic strip. So I guess there would be just every other day there would be jokes about the stud finder, and then some guy sticking it on his chest and saying, beep, found one. Yeah, ha ha ha, so funny. But, you know, it was one of those things where when you're working in a shop, look, if you're not going to be an alcoholic and you're not going to take 18 smoke breaks a day, and you know, you gotta find the funny. Oh man, this is not working out as much as I thought it would. I can hear everything. Well, I might have to build an isolator for this. There's little things online to show you how to do it, but. I think I might like to do that, just because I'm not gonna really like hearing all the little taps and stuff. Anyway, okay, so we did Calvin and Hobbes, so that's good. The other thing that I'm going to talk about is my creative process with photography. Look. Being a photographer is hard, especially when you don't want to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I fall into these ruts where I do the same thing over and over again because they're A, they're safe, B, they're easy, and C, I don't really have to think that much when it comes up with when I have a new person coming over for a shoot or something like that. So I do have a new project that I want to work on. It's going to take a little bit of work for me to make it happen because my faucet outside is broken. And it's not broken, but it's, all right, I'll tell you what, I'm going to piss everybody off and I'm going to unscrew this. I'm sorry. This is annoying. There we go. All right. So A little tripod guy is off. And now I'm just going to do this like I had been doing it. There. A lot less noise. Okay. Well, as soon as I get it situated, a lot less noise. There we go. Okay. So, I'm sure I sound a little different now because it's changed how I'm talking into it. But, all right. Yeah, the creative process. So, weeks will go by, sometimes months, and then I'll get really down on myself for kind of just phoning it in. And when I say phone it in, it doesn't mean I half-ass all my shoots. It means that I kind of have this tool bag. That sounds funny. But I have this tool bag of shots that I can do. And some of it's against the white paper, some of it's against the gray paper, some of it's against the gold wall. You know, and I'll have stuff that I can do in the bedroom. I'll have stuff I can do on the couch with the backlight, with the light coming in through the window, with the beauty light setup. I'll have, you know, I have probably 20 unique. Not unique. What is the word I'm looking for when it's 20 unique? Yeah, I guess I'm going to call it unique anyway. So I have like 20 unique shots that I can do inside this house that I've been doing for years. And maybe I was thinking of the word discreet. Doesn't matter. I thought discreet, maybe discreet means shh, shh, on the quiet. No, you're like, don't tell anybody. It's like, I'm trying not to. But I thought discreet was also like individual. I don't know. I'm going to have to look that up too. It's like, I'm going to have to listen to this again just to write down all the stupid shit I want to look up. And that's, you know what? This is why I need a second person. I need another person sitting over there to tippity-tap on the computer and look stuff up while I'm doing this so I can be smart. But I'm not smart. And I don't want to try to do this while I'm on a computer and looking up stuff because A, you're going to hear me typing, which I don't want that to happen. And B, you're going to get distracto, Greg, sometimes I have a very hard time doing two things at once, especially if my brain, because of the way it works, it assigns priorities in a very strange way. So I will completely disconnect from how I'm speaking, or I will just put it on cruise control. And I'll just start keep talking words while I'm not paying any attention. And then some weird words, I think, weird sentences will come out. And I don't even know what I'm talking about because I'm too busy looking up stuff on Wiki. All right. I shouldn't say it. Wikipedia. I sound like a faggot. Anyway. And when I say I sound like a faggot, that does not mean I sound like a... I don't sound like a mean person about gay. Look, can we just get past this whole thing where retard and faggot do not mean what the people at large want them to mean? We do not want to make fun of mentally handicapped people. We simply do not. That's not cool. It's never been cool. And when we say you're a retard, we go like, duh. We are not comparing you to, I. If I call you a retard, I am not saying that you are mentally handicapped, slow, and incapable of understanding things. I'm calling you a retard because that's the words we use to say, hey, dummy, pay attention because you're smarter than this and you just really screwed up. And I'm calling you out for being dumb at the moment and calling you a retard. Now, if I call you a faggot, it's not because I'm not sensitive to the gay, lesbian, bi, transsexual group. I mean, for fuck's sake, my brother is gay and I support him 100% in his gaydom or gayness or whatever. It doesn't matter. And aren't we done with that too? Aren't we done supporting gay rights? Aren't we just accepting that people are people and shut the fuck up and stop it? It's like, I don't feel like I should have to say I support gay rights. Well, of course I fucking do. I support human rights. I don't say, oh, I think everybody should continue living. Well, no shit. Of course they should. I think everybody deserves to, I think everybody deserves to breathe air. Okay, well, yes, they do. And you know what? If you're gay, you should not have to worry about being gay. You should just be gay. It's fine. Anyway, so I will be very happy the day that we stop saying gay rights. Because there's no such thing as gay rights. There's rights. If you're gay, if you're straight, if you're bi, doesn't matter. You have rights. So, hey, hetero homophobes out there who are just so afraid of the gays taking over and things getting cleaner and nicer, fuck off. You know, everybody's a person. It's not gay rights. It's rights. So stop it. Thank you. Next. All right, I lost my train of thought again. So we talked about Calvin and Hobbes and Maxim, hometown hotties, gay rights, rights. And let's see, Dilbert. My creative process. Okay. All right. So let's go. Let's think about how many shoots I have a year. On average, I would say I shoot 3 times a week. And some weeks are ridiculous. Like this week, I think it's 6. But, and some weeks it's 0. But that's an average, Greg. Obviously, you dumb fuck. Yeah, and here's a problem. Don't ever say, on average, I shoot about 2 to 4 times a week. No, that's not an average. That's a range. So you can say, I shoot about 2 to 4 times a week. You can say that. You don't ever say, on average, I shoot 2 to 4 times a week, because that's not an average. On average, you shoot 3 times a week. That's an average. So, ooh, that's my stomach making weird noises. That's what you get when the microphone rests on my chest. Anyway, that's just a little gripe. So please, if you're going to say on average I weigh anywhere between 138 to 145 pounds, no, that's not on average. On average, you weigh 150 pounds. So that's what you're supposed to say. Okay, that's off my chest now. And all right, so creative project process. I shoot approximately 150 times a year. I'm just going to say, that's about how many shoots I have a year. That's a lot of shoots. That's a lot of different attempts at ideas and coming up with some new things and stuff like that. So please, for the love of my asshole, please, as a new model, do not ask me, do you have any ideas that you've been wanting to do? Well, yeah, I'm sure I do, but you and the other 149 girls that I've shot this year, you all should bring a little something to the table. You know, I'm a good photographer. I admit that, and I'm tooting my own horn right here with that because I've decided that I am very good. I've gotten a lot. I've even gotten better in the last 6 months, and I'm surprised that I did because the 6 months before that, I got better. For the last 6 months, and I couldn't see myself getting much better, but I am getting better. So anyway, the point that I'm trying to make is I don't have time to make these long lists of very cool ideas that I'm going to blow on a brand new model just because she wants pretty pictures for her Facebook. And I'm going to alienate and piss off a lot of people right here when I say, you're not a model. Stop calling yourself models. Look, I like to shoot, and I do it mostly for no money. But holy shit, if you don't stop calling yourself a model and tell me that you're doing modeling, I'm going to smack you, because Tiffany Crystal is a model. That's what she does. She works as a model and she does a lot of stuff as a model. If you call yourself a model because you have done a couple of trade shows and one guy paid you once, stop it. You're just not. And if you're, you know what? If you're 5'3 and 145 pounds and you look like a bag of ass, you're not a model either. Yes, I know. You've got big, hot tits. Love it. You've got a nice round booty. And I don't know, you can rock heels. That doesn't make you a model. I promise you it doesn't. There's a few criteria that make you a model. And you're just not it. So, yeah. Just having a Model Mayhem account does not make you a model. I promise. I swear it doesn't anyway. Creative process. So let's talk about that. Most of the time, I'm inspired by other people. And sometimes I feel like I'm so getting... Yeah, I already did talk about this. Son of a bitch. Okay, you know what? We're going to shift gears and we're not going to talk about that then. What we are going to talk about is this little talk back and forth thing that we're doing right here. And I'm going to do my first across the table interview type just talking thing next week when I'm in LA. And it's going to be with Tiffany Crystal and we are going to talk. And what's interesting is that we were boyfriend girlfriend for about 2.5 years. We just recently broke up. I recently broke up with her. She wants me to make that clear. And I'm going back there in 5 days to spend 6 days with her and do some work out there. And she's got a new place and it's really nice. And so it will be interesting to have this to have a little back and forth talking. Now we've done arts overtime with Art Miles show, and that was kind of cool, but it was all directly at Art, questions to us and back to him. So I think this format is a little more interesting, that we'll be able to go back and forth and talk about some things. I am going to do the very best I can to have a few things written down. Now I know I said in episode one that I was not going to do that, we were just going to talk. And you know, I'm going to stick to that. You know what? Fuck writing things down. I'm not going to do it because I haven't had to do it yet. I kind of went back and forth about whether I was going to do a third one of these tonight. And because, oh my God, I'm really screwing up my life right now because I got up at 1 o'clock in the afternoon today. That's not real good, but that's because I went to sleep at 6 o'clock yesterday morning because I don't have any self-control and I played Black Ops 2 until like 6 in the morning, and that's not healthy. You shouldn't be doing that as a 41-year-old man. However, I did wake up. I went to sleep with a pretty bad migraine. I woke up with a migraine, and instead of just going back to sleep and trying to sleep it off with, I'm sorry, I thought I was hearing something. Maybe not. Anyway, burglars who are playing like violins or something. Instead of taking like Tylenol PM and crashing back to sleep, like I do on a hangover, I decided to get up and do some work. And when I couldn't do work, I fed my fat self a big pizza, which I shouldn't have done, but you know, I bought it, so I might as well eat it. And I've now hit the rock bottom of boredom right here, so you don't want to hear about that, so forget it, fuck that. I'm going to explain to you why I'm still up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Is that so it was I was playing Black Ops again tonight, even though I said I wasn't going to because it was making me angry, and I thought that maybe it was using up all the little bit of testosterone I had left to play these very aggressive, terrible games. So I told myself I wasn't going to play anymore this week, so that when I went out to LA, I might have some juice left for the girl. But no, I didn't follow that, but I did only play for about an hour, which hands down beats what I did last night, which I think I played for 5 hours, but that's just, I don't want to admit that to anybody except everybody listening to So, when I was done with that, I decided I would just lay in bed, and I've been wanting to see a couple of movies that I have again, and one of them being Glengarry Glen Ross. And holy crap, is that a good movie? It just really is. And if you've never seen it, I really recommend seeing it. There's no action, it's all talking, and it's amazing. It really, really is amazing that you can do such a great film with really no acting. I mean, action at all. I mean, they acted their asses off, obviously, but no acting. Damn it, I'm losing my mind. I'm obviously too tired, so yeah, I'm gonna wrap this up pretty soon. But no action, no car crashes, no special effects, no explosions, no guns, nothing like that. It was all just talking and expertly acted by Jack Lemmon, Alec Baldwin, Ed Harris, Al Pacino, Kevin Spacey, and then a couple other guys that I don't remember off the top of my head, but yeah, I don't remember the other ones, but it doesn't matter. But they're all recognizable names and stuff like that. So, just expert cast, amazing acting, great dialogue. It was taken from a play, I imagine, I don't know if it's a Broadway play or not, but or was, but I'll probably wiki that too. Yeah, so I watched that, and then about halfway through it, I decided, I'll probably talk for a little bit tonight because, after watching a movie with all the talking in it, you kind of want to talk. So I obviously cannot talk or speak like any of those actors can, or the writer of the screenplay, but, fuck it, I'm here, I'm talking, so take that. So yeah, I've talked to a couple of the models that I've shot this past week about doing the little sit down and the 20-minute back and forth interview type thing, and both the girls that I talked to seemed very open to doing that, and I'll just have to. I want to make sure that I'm gonna do this right, so I want to try and get a soundboard, and I'm not gonna get a second. Well, I might get a second microphone. We'll see. I don't know. It's really going to depend on if I can set up the boom microphone well, and if I can get up this, get the sound thing working correctly and stuff like that. So we'll see. I don't know what exactly is gonna work, but I want to get this isolated so that if I tap the table or if I do anything. It'd be nice to have a couple of pop filters and stuff like that. But again, this is something that it's just a little dream of mine to have this. And then if somebody wants to listen to it, then great. If somebody doesn't want to listen to it, then fuck you. I don't really care. I'm doing this for me. And that's what I've always done. So listen, at the core, what I do with my photography is what I want to do. I understand and I can appreciate people who want to encourage me and try and push me gently into the right directions, but you're pushing against a wall. It's really not going to go. I have to want to do it. I have to want to stop snorting heroin to stop. That's what's going to really have to happen. Is that and I've had a couple of people in the past see that I'm, I guess, talented or whatever, and they want to kind of push me in the right directions. And I do appreciate that you're trying to do that. I do. I really do. But it's just not going to work. Not the way you think it's going to work. Yeah, all right. So let's see. Is there anything else I want to talk about until the next time? Talked about, South Park. So I don't know if you watch South Park. Of course you do. Everybody fucking watches South Park. But apparently it's in its 16th season. That's a lot of seasons of South Park, and I can't believe it's been on so long, especially after that first season, because it was so progressive at the time, and it was so bizarre to have this animated thing And the animation is so crude, and I'm not talking about, like, nasty. It's just so rudimentary and crude, and looks like it was drawn by 8th graders and, or 8-year-olds or whatever and stuff like that. And it's just, it's not even stylized. It was, what happened was Trey and Matt, when they did their little pilot thing, it was Jesus versus Santa Claus. They didn't really have the ability to use a computer to make it, so they had to cut everything out and do everything kind of like under a pane of glass type situation that we used to do things in the 70s when we were kids. You know, we could make little stop motion shit, and I was in an advanced class when I was in grade school, and I think it was once a week we had to go to a whole different like class or a whole different room. And it was kind of like independent, just stuff we would do. I remember as a class project, a group of these kids were making an animated cartoon where they would, you know, they had the camera set up on top of between two panes of glass, and then you would lift the one pane of glass and move the little character a little bit, then put the glass back down, take a frame of the film, and then you would move it again. It was that tedious and that ridiculous, and that's kind of what Trey and Matt were doing, is they put it together in that way, and you can even see in the very first episode of South Park, you can see the shadows of the paper on the other paper, because you know your background is underneath the first piece of glass, and then your moving stuff is between the two pieces of glass. So there's a little bit of height there, and you can see a shadow on there. And it's really neat to go back and see that, because you can see where they came from and now where they are, which is, if you ever want to really understand South Park and how amazing it really is watch the documentary called 6 Days to Air. And it is basically the process that they go through from the day, let's say they get in on a, I don't know when South Park used to air, but let's say it airs on Sunday, and they get in to work on Tuesday. They get in to work on Monday, and they'll sit in a room around a table, all the writers, and they'll just throw ideas around. And sometimes they have ideas, and sometimes they just sit around and talk about shit until they come up with ideas. And then they start kind of, I mean, it's really amazing how they just write the whole thing, and they are animating it while they're writing it, while they're voicing it. Everything gets sort of done at the same time. And it's amazingly difficult to comprehend that the entire show is put together in 6 days. And they continue to do it. And this past season, this season 16, probably one of the best seasons I've ever seen. I mean, each episode, there were 20 episodes, I think. Maybe not. No, I'm going to say there were 14 or 15 episodes. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make is that maybe two of them were a little boring, but they were all, I mean, just good. And I would say 12 out of the 14 of them were just hilarious and amazing. And, you know, just, I can't believe they still had enough material to write and make these great episodes. And the one I was considering, the one I really liked, was the one about childhood obesity and Honey Boo Boo and it had to do with also the entertainment. Oh, the lowering the bar, the entertainment industry and the America as a whole just having no standards anymore for anything. So James Cameron had to go down to the deepest part of the San Andreas Trench, or it's not San Andreas, but that trench, and raise the bar. So anyway, okay, so yeah, and this went on, it went on and on, and it went way too long, and I'm sorry. And so if you've listened this long, congratulations. I would say you win. I don't have anything to give you except my gratitude that you actually listened to this whole thing, and
You know what my goal is? You know, I say that a lot. It's not really my goal. One of the things I'd like to have happen with this whole thing is that maybe you're 35, 45 years old, and I'm hoping to bring up a lot of things that maybe your immature brain also enjoys. So maybe you've even forgotten about Calvin and Hobbes. Maybe you've forgotten about you know, school when you were super smart and you would go to a special class. You go to advanced, it wasn't AP because that's something that was in high school. But we had something, I can't remember what it's called now, advanced, or I don't know. I'm sure they had some clever name to it or something like that. And you know, whatever. So look, I voted for Anderson in the 76 election, so don't blame me. Was it Anderson in 76 or 80? Maybe it was 80 when it was Carter and yeah, you know what I think it was, when it was Carter and Reagan, and Reagan got elected. Yeah, I voted for Anderson. We had a little mock election, and Anderson was the third party runner at that time, which I'm also gonna have to wiki just to make sure that I'm right. So pretend person over there in the corner, please look up who was the runners for the 1980 elections. Wait. No, would 80 make sense? Yeah, 80 makes sense, because that would have meant I was in, like, fifth grade. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Look, this is me stopping, because I'm losing my mind at this point. It's probably 4:30. 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going to take a couple of my little sleepy advance things. You remember that? I talked about that. I actually went to Walmart and got some, so I got them. Nice. I'm going to go to Dreamland, and yeah, so until next time, and maybe next time I'll have a guest talking with me. So thanks. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye. Why did I say bye? Okay, I'm not saying bye. I'm just saying till next time. This is my just random stream of consciousness. Thanks for listening.